Now, somebody who would know about no train going to Cavan is my next guest, who back in 1996 on March 23rd got to interview no less than Nelson Mandela in South Africa. But we'll all remember him for interviewing Annalise Murphy and the O'Donovan brothers over at the Rio Olympics. I refer to one person. He's the presenter of Countrywide on RT Radio 1, Damien O'Reilly. He joins me now. Damien, good evening.
Good evening to you, Darren. Thanks for having me on.
Listen, absolutely delighted to have you on. And of course, listeners will also be familiar that you do sometimes stand in for Joe Duffy on Lifeline.
Yes, yeah. When I get Joe out the door here, I sometimes have had to do that over the years. And very, very difficult shoes to fill on that programme. People think it's easy, but when you get to the other side of the desk, I tell you, it's a pretty tough programme. Probably the toughest programme that I've done. But I've been very lucky here in RT to present a number of shows when some of the more senior presenters and better known presenters go on holidays. Most recently, I've deputised for Sean O'Rourke as well on Radio 1, but and on Drive Time too. So it's nice to be asked to fill in on those programs. But yes, over the years, going back, oh God, maybe 12 summers now, I've had the great privilege of presenting Liveline, which, look, I mean, if you're a footballer, you want to play, you know, with Man United or Liverpool. If you're a hurler, you want to play with Cork or Waterford at senior level if you're from there. And when you're working in broadcasting, you know, it's great to get called up to the first team and to present programs like that. But it's very easy, I suppose, when you're listening to the radio, as you know, Dara, and your listeners that are listening to you now, how people can be, well, you know, they can be critical, and that's fair enough, and nobody's perfect, but it's a different story to listen to how a programme is presented and then actually have to sit behind the microphone and realise all that goes with it. But look, it's a great challenge, and someday I'll find a real job.
I love that. I love that. And you've been quoted as saying that the best show you'll ever present will be your last one.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like everything else, Dara. I think anybody in life, and you know, I think it was Dr. Pierce Lyons, who was a great friend of mine, Laura Breston, who's the head of Alltech, founder of that international animal nutrition company, Alltech. Got to know him a number of years ago. Irish man, did very well in Kentucky, and he was a great man for speaking and motivating, you know, his staff at a big annual event in Kentucky, which I was privileged to attend a number of years, and he would stand up there, and he was a great motivational speaker, and he'd have a lot of phrases, and I think one of the I'm paraphrasing him, but he kind of said something along the lines, you know, never reach your goal, because you know, if you reach your goal, well then what's left? And I think in life, whether you're a, you know, a shopkeeper or a sports player or whatever you do, the day that you say, yeah, I've achieved everything, well then what's next to actually reach out for? So look, yeah, when I'm on the radio, we might have a show and have the best guests, but I'll always drive home and say, I should have asked that question, or I should have said this, or I should have said that. That just motivates you to come into work and try and be better the next day. And I think it's a simple little motto, never be totally happy with what you do, always try and do better. And I think if we all employ that in life, you know, we can only get better.
Well, that is the truth, Damien. You know, every show that you do or everything you do in life, you want to do the next one better because, as you say, you should have asked this or you should have done that. We're heading down the track, Damien. I suppose this is the reason I wanted to have a chat with you. You present Countrywide every Saturday, which is, you know, it's really the farming program of the week. And whilst a lot of children will be looking forward to Halloween on October 31st, there could be a real-life nightmare taking place with Brexit. And I know down here in East Cork and West Waterford, it's an indigenous farming area like it is right around the country. People are fearful. People are worried. Have they a right to actually be that worried?
Well, I think we all do. And I don't think, Dara, you know, when you're... We're probably roughly in the same generation. We're born in the 70s, and you know, I wonder how history will look back on this time and look back on this year, and you know, the children and grandchildren, what will we be telling them? What will they be asking us about Brexit? You know, will it be that big? And you know, history will tell us that. It can only tell us that. What I'm trying to say is that we're in the midst of a time now that we really don't realise how seismic it is until it actually happens, and that we can stand back in 12 months, 5 years, 10 years, and see how significant it has been. Because it's never actually happened before, you know. And I'm a little bit loath to scaremonger or shock jock on the issue of what will happen to agriculture. There's a lot of theories going around about what will happen, but if I was a farmer, you know, I would be obviously worried, and you don't want to worry farmers. Farmers have enough to worry about without being told, you know, that trade is going to stop and they won't be able to get the, you know, the same price for their animals. I mean, if you know, if any of us are told that about, you know, our occupation, that, you know, next week, you know, you're going to get half your salary from then on or whatever, you can imagine just the sinking feeling it will give you. So we have to be very, very careful, because farmers, as I said, and farm families in particular, it's not just the farmers, but it's their families. You don't want to suddenly have them worrying about something that may not turn out to be just as bad. But look, the statistics are showing us that we're in, when it comes to agriculture, there is one farm leader was again, I'm paraphrasing, was quoted as saying something that, like, even in a good Brexit, even in the best Brexit possible, farming in Ireland is in damage limitation territory, let alone a kind of a no Brexit scenario. There are three issues from farming perspective. Number one, the currency exchange, because we export 80% of what we produce, and down where you are, it's great dairy country, we export so much of our milk all around the world, and we export so much of our beef all around the world. But 50% of our beef goes to the UK. 50% of what we export goes to the UK. 80% of cheddar cheese exported off the island of Ireland, produced by the product that a lot of your listeners down there produce on a daily basis, goes to the UK market. So they're being paid, obviously, in sterling, and with the weakening in sterling, that has a knock-on effect in terms of the value. So that's number one, and that has happened already. And farmers, beef farmers, as we know, are already in the process of receiving some compensation, co-funded by the EU and by the government, that £100 million package announced last week, to make up for those losses which have occurred over the last 3 years since that June 2016 vote. Second issue is obviously tariffs. These are the taxes that are going to be placed on anything that is exported from anywhere outside the UK into the UK. And again, without, you know, bamboozling people with figures, it basically means that Irish farmers will receive less for their produce if there's obviously going to be a tariff to make our products less competitive, slapped on top of the price that they're actually selling to the customers in the UK for. That whole tariff thing is a little difficult maybe for some people to get their head around, but it basically means that, again, for a product that at the moment you're getting paid €100 for, that's suddenly going to become maybe €150, but obviously the customer will only still pay you the 100, so the 50% hit will be taken by the seller. That seems to be, in a rough sort of way, what will happen with tariffs. And then obviously if you have border infrastructure and you have checks, because at the border, if the backstop it goes, you have a scenario where south of the border you're in the EU and north of the border you're in a third country. And because the EU has its own rules when it comes to the single market and customs, there will have to be checks there like there are at all other borders between the EU and so-called third countries. And you can imagine the problem that creates for the lamb, sheep farmers in the north who send their lambs south for processing, the pig farmers in the south who send their pigs north for processing, and the dairy farmers straddling the border who milk their cows in the north and the trucks collect the milk and bring it down south for processing on a daily basis. So from an economic and from an exchange rate and from a practical physical movement point of view, they are the three issues. And agriculture is in the line of fire on all of those fronts. So that's the situation. But nothing has really happened yet for us to actually find out what the day after implications will be. All that has happened so far has been the exchange rate. That has had an impact. The other issues at the moment, it's a case of wait and see, as you said, on the 1st of November.
Yeah, and I'm slow to go down the route of from the political side, but there's a lot of rhetoric going around there, and I'm getting the impression that there are political forces on both sides trying to score brownie points where in the end of it, it is the ordinary, everyday people who are living north and south of the border. They're the ones that are going to be affected. These other people that are in political life, really, you know, they can say what they wish. Now, I know that Fintan O'Toole, writing, excuse me, in the Irish Times last Friday, had a very interesting take on the whole thing, whereby he was suggesting that the seats occupied by Sinn Féin in the north, they could be used to actually, you know, have a good influence in Westminster if they were agreeable to actually giving up their seats to pro-Remain parties in the north.
Yeah, like yourself, I'm loath to go down that road because it is a spider's web. First of all, politicians are elected by the people and they're elected based on who they are and what they stand for. So if you have a political party or a politician at an individual level espousing a certain opinion, it's based on them appeasing their election base, and it's based on them delivering on the promise that they made. And in both Sinn Féin's and the DUP's case, you'd have to say that they are just delivering on their promises. In Sinn Féin's case, it is to abstain from taking their seats in Westminster. That's what they say their supporters voted for them to actually do, so they can't really go back on that. The DUP are first and foremost a party of the union, and Arlene Foster said that in the Panorama documentary a couple of weeks ago. So again, they obviously don't want a situation where you have a border down the Irish Sea, basically landlocking Ireland into a quasi-all-Ireland situation and having different rules for the people in Northern Ireland than the people in England, Scotland and Wales. You can imagine how that would make unionists feel in Northern Ireland. Likewise, if you have border infrastructure, locking physically, almost you could say, nationalists and people with Irish passports in the north and people who identify as nationalists and Irish after the Good Friday Agreement, what sort of an impact it would actually have for them in somewhat taking away their rights as EU citizens as well, or their rights to EU laws. So it is a tricky one. And I read the Fintan O'Toole piece last Saturday. Very interesting, very well thought out scenario, which I think has been completely dismissed all round since then. So, of course, there's always going to be politics at the root of what's happening, and sure, isn't it politics that caused Brexit in the first place, and identity and nationalism and all of that, that basically forced David Cameron to call for the poll back in 2016, because he was feeling the heat from his own backbenchers, who in turn were feeling the heat from Nigel Farage's UKIP. So it's all mired in, as you say, politics, and all politics is local.
It is indeed, and I suppose back then, if David Cameron had his time all over again, he'd never run that referendum, or he might have ran it differently, because I don't think anybody, any realist, thought that the no side or the leave side were going to win.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, we're going back over old territory in this regard. And you know, if we cast our minds back to that pre-referendum sort of political campaigning, and all the promises that were made, and all of the debates that happened, and the 24-hour rolling news coverage of the campaign. It bears now, maybe we should actually, and somebody should go back and do a little bit of research into the promises that were made and the debates that were had and the issues that were discussed in the lead up to that, and see do they bear any resemblance to the problems that are now created. For example, I stand to be corrected, but was Northern Ireland, was the issue of the border, was the issue of tariffs, WTO rules, customs, how the single market would work, was that actually discussed at all nearly in ahead of the election? And if it was, how did the Brexiteers manage to sell it to people that it wouldn't be a problem? I can't remember. And I suppose Brexit is reminds me a little bit of, you know, you going to buy a house and you buy it off the plans based on what you see. And then when you come back a year later to buy the house, it's looks completely different to what you actually paid for. I think in a scenario like that, you'd look for your money back. But that's not happening in this scenario unless there is another referendum. It's an absolute mess. And it's, you know, unfortunately, sucking up so much of our politicians' time, so much of our media's time, at the expense of other big issues which people face at a micro level in their daily lives on this island and indeed in the UK.
And a lot of issues that you would face any time that you're in on Liveline with regard to the health crisis and the homeless crisis. Damien, before I let you go, it would be remiss of me not to pay tribute to a friend and colleague, Noel Whelan, who passed away quite recently and very suddenly. And to be wrong with me not to mention him at this moment.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a man I didn't know. However, I do believe that one of his last broadcasts on RT was actually in a programme I was presenting. And it was around Christmas time when I was standing in for Sean O'Rourke. It was the first programme of the new year, and we were looking ahead to the issues facing politics in Ireland and indeed in the UK. We had a panel in studio very close to where I'm sitting now. And he was one of the contributors. And, you know, Dara, he was one of those, I suppose, you know, for somebody like me, somebody like yourself that's into politics and that's nerdy with regards to, even on our holidays, tuning into the political debates and podcasts and all of that. But I suppose the best tribute you can pay a kind of an analyst like that, be they a sporting analyst, political or otherwise, is, you know, if you don't turn the dial when they're actually brought on, or if you hear that a certain analyst or political commentator is going to appear on a programme, you make sure that you make time to listen. And I certainly feel that Noel Whelan had that weight of authority, and that if there was an issue of the day being discussed on any radio programme or on TV, that if you heard that he was going to be one of the guests, you would make time to actually listen to it. I hope I'm not being patronising in saying that, but I think... you know, we live in a democracy, and I don't think there's anybody in the country that's universally liked, apart from maybe the winner of Love Island, whose name escapes me at the moment, or maybe Shane Lowry as well. What I'm trying to say is that when you have somebody like Noel Whelan or any of the other political or sporting analysts that come on the radio or onto the television and they divide opinion, well, then they're actually doing a job. But I think that analysts have a very, very important job in any democracy, in any society. And while people, you know, go online to be critical of other people giving their opinion, but that's exactly what they're actually doing themselves. I think, you know, in a functioning democracy, it's good to have people like that actually can dissemble the spin and the political messaging and try and give us a down the middle analysis of what's happening, because I think, you know, in this current world of spin, and all we have to do is look across the pond at a certain world leader who is very good at it in his own little sphere of Twitter, it's very important, and more important than ever, that we have good political commentators and independent journalists that can actually, you know, as I said, take the spin out of the message and give people, I suppose, the real meaning as to what's happening in politics. And he certainly was somebody like that, and gone too young and too soon.
Absolutely. Well, look, Damien, thanks for taking time out. I know you're busy. You're obviously researching, getting ready for Countrywide, which goes out every Saturday morning between 8 and 9 on RT Radio 1. But, Damien, thanks for joining us down here in Youghal, and we'll catch up very, very soon. And thanks for sharing your insight into the whole Brexit debacle.
You're very welcome anytime. Thank you, and the best of luck to you and your listeners, Dara.
Thanks, Damien. Take care.
Cheerio. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And there we had Damien O'Reilly, presenter of Countrywide on RT Radio 1 every Saturday morning between 8 and 9. We have our own shows here as well, but Damien is somebody that I've been following for quite an amount of time now, because he does present Liveline in the summertime for Joe Duffy. But his Countrywide show, it's not just all farming, it is everything that goes with it, and I just absolutely love his style. But I was delighted that he was able to take time out to come on and have a chat with me.